Did Job have patience? I think so.
I don't believe.
You don't think so?
I think he did.
No, I don't. He never did dispute God or anything, but.
Well, that's patience.
He owned the ass, though.
Well, he did. I mean, you know, he, in a way.
Well, I think he had all the patience in the world. That's always the patience of Job.
Yeah. Because I think you'll find out today that he shows a little patience.
Four or five times, really. I ain't found where he had patience.
Okay.
What are you waiting for it to say he had patience?
Yeah.
I'm waiting for it. It's like a while over the
season. Yeah.
He's not going to say it.
Well, I'll pick on her. Now, because we left last week, and we know what had happened to Job, that there are three friends of Job's, Eliphaz, Bildad, and Zophar. They heard about what happened to him, so they decided they would go, I guess, to see about him, maybe comfort him. And that's where we pick up today. It when we left last week, it says they sat on the ground with him for 7 days and seven nights, and nobody said a word.
That's patience.
Now, that's patience.
They had a woman with
them. Right. I'm not going there. But after that happened, starting in chapter 3, it does say that Job opened his mouth and cursed the day of his birth. Now, I'm not going to read, because we cover from chapter 3 through chapter 14 or longer today. Can't cover all of the words and the things that were said, but looking at what Job started out saying, we won't read it all. May the day of my birth perish, and the night it was said a boy is born. That day may it turn to darkness, may God above not care about it, and may no light shine upon it. Have you ever had that thought? Why was I ever put here on earth? Why was I ever born? You know, look at what's going on in my life, and I don't deserve all of this.
The world would be better off without me.
Yeah. Everybody else would be better off without me.
Now y'all getting suicidal.
They're getting personal what they're getting, aren't they?
But if you've ever had those thoughts, did you ever have anyone tell you that if you'd get your life straight with God, everything would be okay? Or you're not right with the truth, even though in your mind you know you are? You know, how do you take those words? How would you accept that from a true friend? It would be difficult.
And only one person knows your heart, so they can say, a true friend can say what he wants to say, just like these three men sat and agreed with him, but they really didn't know Job's heart. And only one person knows your heart.
That's me.
Right. All right, we'll stop right there, because they are going to offer Job, quote, their advice. But let's pick on Betty this morning. And Betty's my volunteer. She's got car trouble. So what advice can y'all give Betty to take care of her car?
Exercise. Call my daughter Sue, and she comes in.
Call for, like you said, call for a mechanic. Call somebody that is car knowledgeable. How does that sound?
Mm-hmm. All right. If Betty hears all that from everybody, and you know, even some other things about, you know, if you had done this, it wouldn't have broken. If you had paid more attention to fixing it and maintaining it, it would have not broken. How does that make you feel?
I don't know what they're talking about.
Okay. It's your car, it's your business, but there again, they're trying to tell you, give you their opinions about what you should have done. And that's kind of what these three gentlemen did to Job, is after sitting with him and after listening to Job expound upon why I'm not worthy of being here, we start with Eliphaz. It's chapter 4, verses 6 and 7, two verses there. It says, "Should not your piety be your confidence, and your blameless ways your hope? Consider now, who, being innocent, has ever perished? Where were the upright ever destroyed?" Now, in those two verses there, you think that these gentlemen maybe understand what Job is going through, what he's thinking, but they come across with that thought, you know, maybe Job, I do know your heart, but you're not accepting that you have done something wrong in the past and you won't admit it. If you'll just go ahead and confess to God what you've done wrong, what you've sinned against, he'll take all this away from you. But Job knows, I haven't done that. But when he talks about, he says that God would never punish the innocent. Is that right or wrong?
He didn't know what he was talking about.
No. It's not that God chooses. I mean, I won't say that God will choose one over another and inflict punishment on them. But you could be the most righteous person in the world, following the word as every day goes, and you can have pain and suffering in your life. That statement, if I was Job, and I think this is the way Job took it, is you're speaking out of context. You know, you're telling me that I am not an innocent person. But if we think about, are we all innocent? Or is there something in our lives that we could, so let's say, give up and do over to be a better Christian, to have a stronger walk with the Lord? Because a question comes up, and we look at what Eliphaz says, and it did hurt Job. I think I'll say this out loud. Context is, have you ever criticized a situation or an action or a person about something that's happened before you knew all the facts?
Yeah, that's human. Now, we're all guilty. Mm-hmm. And like you said with Betty, you hear just enough of a story about somebody or a situation, and you've already got it solved.
You got it fixed.
And if they had done that, versus we never heard the whole story, and that they did some of those things.
Mm-hmm.
Well, one of the biggest things that's really ever hit me real, real hard in something like that is I have in previous years had some very close calls with my husband, and we would have round the clock nursing or sitting up or something, and I'd have people to call me on the phone and say, "You can't do that. You can't sit up that many hours. You can't do this. You got to get rest," and things like that. They didn't know the situation. I didn't have money to hire people around the clock. I didn't have no choice. But they come on strong, and it would be my own family and friends.
Yeah, I think.
But they didn't volunteer set up.
You could always ask for volunteer. I got a list. You know, when do you want to sign up and help?
How many people will tell you you can't do this when you got sickness, man?
Mm-hmm.
You got to do what you got to do.
That's true.
It was like we couldn't afford to pay someone to come and take care of Mama Marshall when she was sick.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But in chapter 6, verses 2 and 3, Job says these words, "If only my anguish could be weighed and all my misery be placed on the scales, it would surely outweigh the sands of the seas. No wonder my words have been impetuous." Now, if you take that literally, we know today that, I mean, we know about the whole world. We know the shape and the form. But think about in Job's days, did Job know that beyond the place where he lived, the little country he lived, that there was a whole other world? So when he talks about the sands of the seas, we know what magnitude that could be, but thinking about Job, Job didn't understand the magnitude of the world. So he uses those words, if all of my troubles could outweigh the sands, or if the sands of the seas, you know, comparing it there. He, looking at it that way is, you know, telling you or telling me, then if my worries outweigh all the sands of the seas, then yeah, I've got something to worry about. But his words, when he talks back to Eliphaz, he goes on, he talks about different things, but verse 24 in chapter 6, Job finally says, "Teach me and I will be quiet. Show me where I have been wrong. How painful are honest words. But what do your arguments prove? Do you mean to correct what I say and treat the words of a despairing man as wind?" Job, there again, Job still knows his heart. He knows his innocence. And in these words here, he's sort of pleading to God. Show me where I've been wrong. If I'm going to be treated like this, show me where I have been wrong, and I'll change. But was it a plea from Job to God to kind of hush up Eliphaz and tell him to be quiet? I've listened to you, you know, and I'm trying to tell you, I know that my God hasn't inflicted this upon me because of something I have done wrong. Because if we go back, these three gentlemen, and it started with Eliphaz, pretty much are telling Job that it's your kids' fault. If your children had lived the lives they were supposed to have lived and had done what is right, you wouldn't be inflicted with what's going on today. Look at how the Lord treated them. As a parent, you raise your children in the way, the Bible teaches us, in the way you wish they should go, but you have to release them. If they do wrong and it goes against you, you try to express your opinion, you try to give them guidance to help them, but it doesn't always work. But is it our fault?
No.
No. No. That's where Job is at with these three gentlemen here.
Don't this, after him talking about teach me and I'll hold my tongue, this makes you want to go back to where they sat around for a week
and then say anything.
Exactly. So why did they wait a whole week? And in that time frame, his world was falling apart, and his, you know, and they sat there for a week. Now, why? Why didn't they start on him? Because that's what I do. The minute we got there, we start.
You know?
And so, but it makes you wonder, why did they sit for a week and watch him grieve over what was going on in his life? And then all of a sudden, because if they sat, how much sinning was involved in just sitting?
Yeah. I don't know. Is it good at times when, if it's a good personal friend, you know they're suffering, they're hurting, if you go to see them, is it always a proper thing to just start off with, just start in a conversation and hit upon it,
Yeah.
Or is it best sometimes to go and be that friend that you go and you console, you acknowledge, but you're there. You're just there. And then that person...
So it makes you wonder, did Job talk to them in those 7 days?
It says...
Just listen.
Well, it says no one said a word to him, but it doesn't say if Job expounded upon what was going on in his life. But I don't think really Job needed to tell them. They already knew what had happened. But if we skip over to chapter 8... Verses 4 through 8. Now this is Bildad. And he says, when your children sinned against him, he gave them over to the penalty of their sin. But if you will look to God and plead with the Almighty, if you are pure and upright, even now he will rouse himself on your behalf and restore you to your rightful place. Your beginnings will seem humble, so prosperous your future will be. Ask the former generations and find out what their fathers learned. Now, Bildad is under the impression, like I said earlier, that all of this is coming upon you because of your children. And Job, you know the life you had in the past, you know all the riches, you know all the wealth you had, you were very prosperous. But if you'll just go to God and ask him to forgive you for what your children had done, then remember how your life was. But once you do this and God turns back on you, your life is going to even be better. You're going to have more wealth. You're going to have more cattle. You're going to have more this. I've never heard anybody ever say that. But let's say to an unbeliever, a non-Christian, do they ever, are some ever misled, let's put it that way, by another Christian, that if you'll just change your ways and if you'll give up all these bad things you're doing, your life is going to change and you're going to have everything you want. Everything's going to be fine.
You can get more stuff.
I guess so. Yeah.
All that prosperity.
And it seems like this guy, the material things was really important to him. The first guy was telling them how bad he was. He kept sinning. But this guy, about the prospering, all the material stuff is, you're going to get more cows and more this
mm-hmm.
and more that. So this one evidently liked the material. And, there are people in this world that are friends with people who have the material stuff, and that's why they're friends.
That's why they want to be friends.
That's right. And I want to be friends with you because you have a lake house and a boat, mm-hmm. or you have a beach house, and there are people in the world that are just that way. They're not your true friends. They're your friends, but then when you don't have your beach house no more,
they're not a good friend anymore.
I'll find somebody else that has one, and that's true. We see that every day.
Mm-hmm. But
back in those days, they believed if something's wrong with you that you'd done something wrong.
Yeah.
There's
some
people that believe that today.
Yeah.
I think you're suffering for,
Well, if they know the Bible, you know you're not. There are people like this that don't believe.
Well, I wasn't going to say this, but I can attest to that because this goes way, way back. I had problems with depression and bad thoughts and different things. And there were two individuals very close to me that thought that my heart was not right with the Lord. That's why I was dealing with all of this. As it turned out, I had a chemical imbalance, and once they discovered that, everything's fine. Do I not love those men anymore? I still do.
But did it make his wife mad?
Yeah.
Oh, it was not a good thing.
Knowing his wife, I'm sure.
But does God only punish those who do evil and accept only those who do right?
No.
He's here to accept us all.
That's right. One of the examples of that you could use or think about that people, our children are healthy, you know, but a parent that has had a baby and in a time frame, let's say from the time it's born to say 6 to 9 months, what has that baby ever done to anybody that's seen? Nothing. And I followed this story out of Birmingham, and anyway, they lost their baby after 9 months. And the mother wrote about that, the things the child wasn't going to get to do, but how pure she was, because she never experienced anything in her life to make her sin. So it's kind of like what you were just talking about. You know, there are situations that there is a person that is sinless. Now, that's just my belief as far as a child.
Mm-hmm.
And he's a loving God. There is a reason why the child came and the child's not here. And in time you'll understand it. But that child was pure. It never did anything in life to have a blemish on it, I guess you could say.
Yeah, that, and this is not part of the lesson, but in the Alabama Baptist this week, there's been a committee formed, the quote the Calvinist something committee, but in their letter, what they had come about, there was a particular point about that. I don't know if there are people who believe that you come into the world full of sin, because they had a little blurb in there that we as Baptists, our faith and beliefs are you enter the world blameless. And if you die at that moment, God accepts you into heaven. That's our thoughts. But are there people who believe that if a newborn comes into the world and dies, they go to hell because they haven't been saved?
Yeah,
and that, I couldn't.
Mm-hmm.
No.
I said, they don't believe in hell. It's Hades, you go to the ground and that's it.
Yeah.
They don't
believe
in hell.
But also, this scripture, because Oliver's worked with a J.W. all his life, this scripture about your sons and them, his previous boss, they're very active in the church. And a great thing in their church is to reach to be an elder and then like a circuit person. Mm-hmm. And you go around to... Well, his boss, that was... He would have liked... He wanted to achieve that. He worked really, really hard. And he's really... You know, he's a very good man. But he had three children. He has three children, a son and two daughters. They chose not to walk that path. I know one of the daughters is real active in their church where they live, and you know, so they are not JWs. And because he couldn't control his children, they never let him reach that point. And they went to his children and told them, if you straighten up and be nice, then you're dead. And they've made their own lives and they raised their own families in churches. And because when they were young, he never got to achieve what's really a big deal in their church. Just because, just like Job, he couldn't do anything with his children.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know when I said the Jehovah Witness, well, Hank lives in Uncle Jim, had a baby and it died, and they had the Jehovah Witness preaching at their house that Sunday, we was there. And the preacher said, if Aunt Lizzie and Uncle Jim had not joined the Jehovah Witnesses, that baby would live that hill. Mm-hmm. That's when we got up and left the room. My daddy grabbed us like a hair of the head.
But think about the heart. In Hebrew times, they say it represented an individual's capacity to decide. Now think about your own life. I'm sure there's no one in here who's ever had any problems that would cause any stress. But think about situations your car breaks down when it doesn't need to. An illness occurs. You lose a loved one. It affects your heart in a way that it affects your whole body. It affects your cardiovascular system. If we went through life without any worries at all and everything, you know, would we have to depend upon medicines to take care of us, our blood pressure? Or would there still be those problems? Because Zophar sort of has that thought, and these three gentlemen, is there again, Job's heart's not right. Zophar in verse 14, and this is in chapter 8, I believe. He said, "What he trusts in is fragile, what he relies on is a spider's web." Verse 15, he tells him, he leans on his web, but it gives way. He clings to it, but it does not hold. There again, they're trying to, he's telling Job, you know, if you just go ahead and repent, go ahead and tell the Lord what you've done wrong, then he's going to remove all this away from you. You're hanging on to something that you don't need to hang on anymore. Job, if you'll do this, you don't have to walk around being ashamed of your life anymore. Now, do you think Job, and then we know Job's heart, Job understood what his friend's saying, but he also understood God's wisdom. I'm listening to you, but I'm not hearing it. That's what I'm taking from this. If you flip over to chapter 13, verse 4, this says, "You, however, smear me with lies. You are worthless physicians, all of you." Now that's Job speaking. So, did Job have patience? he does, but does Job have an opinion? Yes, he does. Job is not a person who, how would say, are there people in the world who feel like they're so inferior that they can't make a decision on their own? They have to rely upon someone else's opinion in order for it to be okay for me to do something. Mm-hmm. In some ways that's okay, but a lot of times you depend on somebody else. Their thoughts and attitudes are wrong. They're leading you down the wrong path. But you're still not strong enough to reject what they're saying. If we go down, and this is Job speaking, chapter 13, this is verses 22 through 25. He says, "Then summon me, and I will answer, or let me speak, and you reply. How many wrongs and sins have I committed? Show me my offense and my sin. Why do you hide your face and consider me your enemy? Will you torment a wind-blown leaf? Will you chase after dry chaff?" Now, how do you think these three men felt when Job turned away from them, telling them, you know, you're just, your opinions are yours, you're worthless doctors? And he turns and he opens up to God and tells God these things. "If you'll summon me, if you'll call upon me, I'll answer. But you haven't." You know, how many things have I done wrong? Show me and I'll commit. I'll confess my sins. Job knows in his heart what his life has been, how he has walked the walk, the things that he's done that are good. But let's think about the suffering that Job has gone through. And today's story and how, quote, friends can be a help, but sometimes, I want to say this, can be a hindrance to you by some of the things they say. But are any of us excluded from suffering?
No.
But are there times when suffering is necessary?
You know, sometimes if we didn't go through trials and suffering,
you wouldn't grow.
That, we would just kind of rely on our own selves. We think we could do it on our own. Oh, you know, we need to go through things like that to be able to rely on God, and that builds a relationship with Him and builds our strength in Him.
Well, it affects your prayer life, too, because, you know, if everything's rocking along, then it's okay just to say, like, thank you for this, and then you move along. But as you go through something that you haven't agreed with or deal with, He's there all the time.
Bring you down to your knees.
That's right. It makes you more humble, I guess you could
say.
Because I won't go over all these scriptures. There's several things that this writer points out. Verse 23 in chapter 13 relates to, you know, how many wrongs and sins have I committed? Show me my offense and my sin. But suffering does sometimes come from judgment. You know, if you're in disobedience to God and He's working on you, I won't say that God is inflicting the suffering that you're going through. You're doing it to yourself. You're not listening to what God's telling you to do. Change your ways. Same goes for discipline. There are things in your life that are wrong that you're doing. You need to correct them, but you're not. And as long as you're doing those things to yourself, you're going to suffer. Does suffering come as a necessity sometimes? I mean, we look at our lives as things that we go through, but take upon yourself as being a missionary going into a foreign country that you know nothing about. Are you going to suffer there? And the suffering that you go through, you're going to go through it. And I'll say this out of necessity, because that's your heart, that's your calling, that's what you want to do. So if I'm going to go and try to teach and win others to Christ, if I suffer, I'm going to suffer out of necessity for Him. Consequences. But then think about catastrophes. I mean, knock on wood, Montgomery's been blessed, but what if we had a major storm come through and take us away, like Oklahoma, that some of those cities have gone through, and you lost everything you had? Would you blame God? Would you turn away from God because, you know, you didn't have to do this? You took everything I'd worked for away from me. But like Annette said a while ago, you lose everything, but then as you rebuild and you rebuild your life, I won't say this is God discipline in your life, but you see, things that I used to have are gone. I don't need that anymore. So, but you build your life again, and your life becomes richer because you're setting your sights, or you're setting your goals on the things of need, what I really truly need, and not what I had or what.
Yeah.
But do we sometimes suffer out of mystery? Mystery. Is this really true?
Yeah. Well, yes.
But do you ever question the words in here? Or do you ever question the things that we've been taught? And when you start questioning those things, are you trying to prove something that is true, but you're trying to twist it and make it become what you want it to become? But if you do suffer, is that, quote, suffering out of mystery? You're looking into another world that doesn't exist.
Waiting on you to say that.
No.
Everybody looks at Betty and says,
no.
I guess
no.
If you, as Christians, I'm sure majority of in this, we were raised in church. We went to church. We've been here all of our lives. We've had, as you would say, this mystery, this book, in our lives always. So, personally, I don't consider it a mystery. But I guess people who have not dealt with the scriptures their whole life or seen how the scriptures has affected their life, it could be a mystery, I guess you would. You know, because why do I believe in somebody that I can't see or touch? Well, he's never stood in front of me. I've never touched him, felt his face or anything. Why do I believe that he is my Savior? Why do I believe when my time is over, and like the song said, you know, I read the book and I know the end of the story. Why do I believe that I know where I'm going to be? And there's just no ifs and ands and buts about it. That's the end for me.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess for people who've never dealt with it, it could be a mystery. But for us, it is not a mystery. For us, it's a way of our life. We know when it's over where we're going and what's going to be the end results for us.
You see, so much of this we understand, but the natural man has no clue.
Doesn't. Mm-mm.
Yeah.
That's why you ask the Lord, open your spiritual heart and your eyes and ears.
And that's why we better read it every day, because we get somebody who's a false teacher, then you learn something that would look right.
And then for us, there is I'm sure it's like a fairy tale, maybe for others, but it talks about the streets of gold and, the mansions. We know that we're going to get to be a part of those. But for those that are not Christians or in another world, this is like a fairy tale for them. Like in Cinderella, you know, but it's not. For us, it's the truth. We know the truth, and we know the gift that we have to get to that point in our lives.
Yeah. But this one verse in chapter 13, verse 15, and I'll close with this. Job says, though he slay me, yet will I hope in him. I will surely defend my ways to his face. Because, like I say, in the end, we know we're going to meet our Maker, and you're going to have to defend yourselves.
Well, most people that don't believe in anything, Sandra, just think they're going through life and they die, that's going to be it.
I'm in the box, and I'm going to stay in the box, and it's over.
But compared to the wind, you can't see.
That's right.
I always think about that.
That's right.
It's a mystery too, but as far as you can't see it,
but you know it's there because you see. The evidence is like we know he's there because we see him and feel him in our hearts. But like the wind,
Okay.
That's it.
The words of my mouth and the meditation of my heart be acceptable in thy sight, O Lord, my strength and my redeemer.
Thank you, Mr. Oliver.
Yes, ma'am.